Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Born to Talk radio show. And my guest today is Sheila Ostrom. She is the president and co-founder of the nonprofit Living with Dementia, CNY, in New York. Welcome to the show, Sheila.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm excited to share what it is you do. And I thought we could start off by having you just, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I owned a home care company for the last 15 years that specialized in helping families with people that they were caring for with dementia, various types of dementia. And I did that for 15 years. And last year, I decided to sell the company so I could really focus more on helping families find the answers and to get more help and training, specifically dealing with people with dementia.
Got it. So where did you go to college?
I went to college at Alfred University in Alfred, New York.
Got it. Okay.
Just curious. Yeah. And I live in Syracuse now. So.
Okay. And so, I don't know what the weather's like by you, but it's sunny and warm here. Do you have just piles of snow at your house right now?
No, it's all melted.
Oh, well, good.
Yes.
I'm glad
yes.
to hear that. Well, thank you for just sort of giving us a little background on yourself. So what first led you to start Senior Home Care Solutions back in 2010?
It really goes back to my mom. Things happen to you in life that changes the trajectory of what you're meant to do. I lost my mom when I was in my 20s, and she had vascular dementia. So when I turned 40, I wanted to do something better with my life and decided that I would start a home care company to help families with people with dementia. And that's kind of how it started. It was just myself and one client. And when I sold the business last January, I had about 65 employees. So it was a wonderful journey, but I really wanted to do more with the helping, because as you run a business, you get further and further away from the people.
That's true. So your mom died. You were in your 20s when your mom died, and she had Alzheimer's.
She had vascular dementia.
What is vascular dementia?
Vascular dementia has to do with oxygen flow. It is one type of dementia.
All right. Well, I have a feeling as we continue this conversation today, you're going to be our instructor. And I'm looking forward to that. What were families missing when you first entered the home care space?
So the hardest thing about the home care space is that people generally are in it when they're in crisis. And because of that, they don't know what to do. They don't know where to go. They just don't know how to support their loved ones, and they're just so stressed because they're trying to fix a problem they really don't have a lot of knowledge in.
Interesting. I my parents died rather young, but I didn't have those experiences. I'm a big definition person, and you're the expert. So let's start off by some definitions. Would you define what dementia actually means?
Yes, and this will be very helpful for some people, because dementia and Alzheimer's, a lot of people use interchangeably, and that's not really the case. Dementia is an umbrella term. So think of an umbrella. Dementia is the umbrella term that describes a set of symptoms: memory loss, confusion, poor judgment, and thinking abilities that start to interfere with daily life. So dementia is the umbrella term. Alzheimer's is one type of dementia. Vascular dementia is another type. Lewy body dementia is another type, which has become very popular because of a famous person. And also frontal temporal dementia. So those are just a few of the different kinds of dementia out there. What most people don't know is there's over 100 types of dementia that have been diagnosed. But most people get lumped into the four we just talked about.
Well, so is there a difference in behavior between somebody that has Lewy body and somebody that has frontal temporal?
Yes, there is, because it affects different parts of the brain. People with Lewy body and frontal temporal, it's generally a faster, more devastating progression of the disease. So that's one of the things that make it so hard. And they also have a lot of different behaviors associated with them. And that's what makes it so challenging. And another way to think of it is you go to an ice cream shop. Ice cream is the umbrella. Chocolate is one type. Vanilla is another. Strawberry is another. Oh, so you have different types. Yeah.
They're all different ice cream types. But they aren't the same.
Correct.
I don't know how many people knew that or didn't know that, but I appreciate you letting me know that, because I think that's important as people are listening to this. And so thank you for doing that. How did specializing in dementia care change the way you approached home care?
So dementia care can be a little bit more challenging because the person is still, especially when they're in the beginning stages, is still very capable of doing a lot of things, but they need some oversight. And a lot of times, they don't want oversight. They're fine. They don't think anything's wrong with them, and they don't want any help. So it can be very challenging. And as the disease progresses, it changes as well. What they can and can't do is they lose skills. And with different types of dementia, once you lose a skill, you cannot get it back. So really? If you stop being able to use a fork and knife, you can't relearn that skill.
Is there, in the progression of this, does it everyone's experience is then different, I presume?
Every single person is different. If you know one person with dementia, you only know one person with dementia, and that's what makes it so challenging. No one can tell you, well, how long will this go on, and are they going to get mean? And those are the questions a lot of people have. Sure. And there is no set path. Regardless of the type of dementia, they're never the same for two people.
Interesting. That's really interesting. I think that why this is such an incredibly important podcast, because I think every guest is important, but I think that this is speaking to those people that are really maybe having a parent or grandparent or a spouse that needs to know about these things, because I'm certain, or children, that it's important, and it is important to get an actual diagnosis. Is that right?
It is. It is very much so. So a lot of people, if they go to the doctors, and let's say they're diagnosed with cancer, what's the first thing you ask when the doctor tells you you have cancer? What kind?
Right, what kind?
What kind of
cancer? Am I going to die?
And with dementia, people don't really get tested. They don't really know what type of dementia. Things get lumped into, if your primary care doctor doesn't forward you on to see a specialist, like a geriatric doctor or a neurologist, you really don't know what kind of dementia you have. And it's important to know, especially because we have some things changing in our world right now. And there are some different trials going on with medications that can help slow the progression, or at least they believe they can. So we finally have made some headway. And it's very important to actually get a diagnosis. So many people just won't do it because they're afraid. And going to your doctor and having them ask you to remember three words, apple, table, penny, and draw the hands on a clock, that is not a true mental screen. A real mental screen should take about 45 minutes for initial screening. And it's answering questions and doing some different things on paper.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously I'm a senior, and, you know, these, when you go to your family doctor, they have you draw a clock. Like you just said, they say three words and you repeat them back. So yep. I know that, you know, not everybody that's listening to this has experienced that, but I do know that that is not an uncommon practice. And that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's a Medicare requirement.
Yes. That's exactly right. Well, when you reach a certain age, you know, rather than complain, be grateful you have it.
And when we're working with people in the home, you know, working with families with loved ones who have dementia, they really need a different type of training. Because I kind of, coming back to that from your last question, I kind of went off topic. And because I'm very passionate about this.
I'm glad.
Yes. And so when you're working with people with dementia, it's not intuitive. This is not easy. You need to think before you speak. You need to be one step ahead of the person you're trying to work with. And there's different things you can do that will eliminate behaviors or not make the person feel stupid. Because often when a person with dementia acts out, whether it's kicking, biting, screaming, whatever, hitting, there's usually something we have done to trigger that. Not always, but a lot of times it is. We've either made the person feel afraid, they have an unmet need, so they may need to go to the bathroom, but they can't communicate it. They may be in pain and can't communicate it. All of those things can be what is happening. You approach somebody from the side, and a person with dementia, their vision changes as they go through the disease. And it's not that they can't see, but they cannot process as quickly. So we sometimes will scare them if we approach them from the side and not from the front.
I see. It's a very interesting topic. And I just would wonder, what are the biggest misconceptions families have about dementia and caregiving?
I don't think people understand what they're getting into until they are in crisis mode. And one of the big problems with that is we do not do a great job of planning to die in the United States. We don't talk about it a lot. We don't plan for it. And having a will is not what I'm talking about. You know, a lot of people will have, well, I want this person to have this person to have this. You need to make sure that you know what are your loved one's wishes. We started doing this with my children, our children, my husband and I, when they were 18 years old. They know what we want, what we don't want. You need to have a healthcare proxy set up. You also need to have a power of attorney durable set up. And it's really important that you know what the person wants, because if you don't have those items in place and the person cannot make their own decisions or can't make decisions that are smart, you have no leg to stand on.
Yeah. I'm in my mid-70s and I live alone. My husband passed away 17 years ago, a few days ago. And so I have everything that you've just described, not to mention my children understand what I want.
Yes.
And I think that that's really important. And, you know, I think the other thing, I'm just speaking from personal experience, that to do this when you're not in a crisis, to do this when you're feeling fine and you've got your attorney involved, you've got your whomever, your financial planner, all these different people, especially if you're a widow or a widower and you're living alone, it's really important that your families understand what's going on with you. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And it's important they understand what you want. And the easiest way to start that conversation is, when you die, what don't you want? Because it's easier for people to start in reverse than it is to start with what I do want.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. So why does dementia require a different care approach than, say, traditional senior care?
Because the person with dementia really still in the beginning stages can do things and they want to be in charge and they have different sets they go through, different levels. And the big problem with that is in the beginning, they're in denial. I don't have a problem. I'm fine. And by the time and you'll notice that it's starting to change. So my mother-in-law is using the telephone for the remote and the remote for the telephone.
Oh,
and doesn't realize that she's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Other people don't eat. They'll just eat snacks or things they can pick up, but they won't take a meal anymore. They won't change their underwear for a week. Because they're starting to forget things. And as families, we want to help our loved ones as best we can. However, sometimes we can be very pushy about how we go about that. And there's ways to work with your family so that they are, in fact, feeling like they're a part of the conversation and the decision-making process. And that's hard. It's a hard thing to do because as a senior, we're strong, independent people, and we want to maintain that.
Yes.
But there comes a time where we can't critically think anymore because our executive function is difficult, or we start to lose our language,
mm-hmm.
And we make bad choices. You know, we'll buy silver coins over the phone with a guy who's talked to you, those types of things.
Right.
And it happens. I've seen it all happen.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if where you live and your family lives in another state, another city, they're not nearby, you know, that I'm sure complicates things as well, right?
It makes it very complicated. And it tends to be, having a big family is not always wonderful when you're trying to treat, you know, help someone in your family with dementia. The biggest thing is the care usually falls on one family member,
mm-hmm.
in my experience. And that family member is usually so burnt out. And one of the things that you can do is you have family members who are out of town do other things. First thing, they come for 2 weeks every year and give you a break so you can take a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
When the person is sundowning at night, when they become agitated, which is a very common phenomenon with different types of dementia, you have a family tree. Someone will call and distract that person. Because all it takes sometimes is just that phone to ring and the person isn't worrying about the little girl they're seeing out the window or this type of thing.
Right.
Hmm. And the people who live out of town support with financial stuff. They can help pay for some care so you have respite as the caregiver. And they also can handle the finances, pay the bills, that type of thing.
Right.
And I've seen a lot of families do this well. And I've seen a lot of families not do it well.
Do you find that, and this is a generalization question, that this person that does have dementia is more comfortable being at home than in a facility?
Almost everybody will tell you, I'm going to stay in my home until I die. And I warn your listeners, never promise that you will keep your loved one at home because there may come a time where you can't do it. And it is very, very hard. And to be honest with you, Marcia, there's guilt either way. You feel guilty that you have them somewhere safe. You feel guilty because they're at home, but they're, you know, they aren't They aren't with somebody all the time. And there's pros and cons to both. I just went through this with my mother-in-law, and she swore that she would never live with us. And she has Alzheimer's, and she will not live in the house with us. She wouldn't do it. And we thought when push came to shove that she would. So when it became unsafe for her to live at home alone, we said, okay, it's time. You know, we have to make a different living arrangement for you. We thought she would come live with us, and she refused. She always refused. She said, I'd rather go somewhere else. And Marsha, this was terrible for us. You know, I am a dementia expert. I should be able to handle this, but she absolutely did not want to. And she's told us that for years, but I really thought when push came to shove that she would come. So we did find her the best place that she can be. And to be honest, she is thriving there.
It has gone
so much better than I could have ever imagined. But my mother-in-law also doesn't have behaviors. So she's an easier person to place in a memory care facility. Because if your family members, you know, are taking care of your loved one with dementia, if that person has behaviors and they kick and they bite and they scream and they run out the door every chance they get, it's hard to place them because nobody wants them disrupting their communities. And that's the truth. That's the hard truth. So the people with the most difficult situations end up getting so burnt out because their home life is so, so stressful, and it is never rewarding.
Wow. Wow. How did caregiver training become such a critical part of your work?
So when I started my home care company, I'm like, there's got to be some other training out there that I can get for my employees that would be good. And so I actually became a dementia educator with Tipa Snow, who is a renowned speaker and trainer of the positive approach to care. And so I became...
Would you repeat that name again?
Yep, her name is Tipa, T-E-E-P-A, Snow. Like snow
All right,
falls
go
from
ahead.
The sky. And she has a website and lots of reviews. A lot of people know of her because of Bruce Willis. So she's become very popular. But, you know, myself and two of my other teammates, we all became trainers, consultants, and educators with her. And we were able to train our own employees and then help families as well. So that was something that we did early on. We were an early adapter of that. And, you know, it's just gone from there. And it's really important to give your tools to your caregivers so they know how to work in a situation. I'll give you an example. We had a gentleman who had a lot of hallucinations, which is very common with Lewy body dementia. And every night before he went to bed, he would see people outside with bows and arrows and thought they were trying to kill him. And this was a reoccurring hallucination he had generally during sundowning time, which for him was between 5 and 8. And remember, I'm in upstate New York, so it's dark here more in the winter. Mm-hmm. And the only way that you could turn him around was to make sure that you helped him fire fake bows and arrows out the window until everybody was gone. And this gentleman also had family portraits all along his dining room wall. Do you remember how that used to be so popular? You have all your family portraits?
Yep.
He insisted on feeding those family portraits every night. Mm. And if he didn't, he truly thought that they were starving. So there was plexiglass over the picture. So every night he would feed them and we'd wipe them all down after. And I know this sounds crazy, but with dementia, you have to go with the person because they have a broken brain. You cannot rationalize with a broken brain. If a person says the sky is purple, you say it is a beautiful shade of purple. You don't correct them. It doesn't matter if the story's right. It doesn't matter if they're saying they went on a big trip to Alaska last week and it's not true. Go with them. What did you catch on your trip? What did you see? Just go with it. And that is not intuitive. It takes a little practice.
I bet.
As a daughter, you're like, Dad, you didn't go to Alaska last week. And then you make the person feel stupid. Mm-hmm. And that is never a good thing because we become defensive. So a big part of what we have to do is go with it as long as it's safe.
Sure. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that somebody in that condition cannot live alone in their home.
They shouldn't.
Yes. Okay.
But I can tell you, lots of people live alone with different types of dementia because it is so expensive for care and they don't have the resources. And that's one of the reasons I started this nonprofit, was so that I could help provide some respite care to families who are desperately in need.
That's great. You have, by the way, you have a wonderful website. And I'm looking at it right now, and I'm going to ask
you
a few questions about your website in just a moment. But I know you transitioned from one company, right? You had a company that you actually, did you sell that company?
I did. So Senior Home Care Solutions was my home care company that I started and founded in 2010, and I sold it in January 1st of 2025. So that I could fulfill more philanthropic. Philanthropic, you know, activities surrounding dementia.
What was the most important thing that happened to you during that transitional time?
So I was very lucky. I really wanted to make sure that my home care company went into good hands and that they would take care of my people and our clients. Mm-hmm. And I had a local woman who is a care man. She has a care management company. And so she was wonderful. And she said that she'd be interested in purchasing the company.
Nice.
So we moved in together 4 months ahead of time, got everything set up and running. And then I stepped out. So it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's been a great transition.
And you've learned a lot along the way, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Always things to learn every day.
Is there a particular lesson that you learned that you could share with us?
I have learned that the nonprofit funding world is very slow.
Okay.
So that's something I have learned. But for your caregivers out there, don't wait. Don't wait till you're in crisis to make a plan. A lot of your good facilities that have memory care units are full and they have long waiting lists. And I am speaking specifically in the New York area, and we are in you know, central New York, around that Syracuse region. And we don't have that many of them. And most of them here do not accept Medicaid. So it's very difficult. You need to plan ahead and make sure you know the wishes of your person.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. In trying to stay focused and intentioned on our questions, what was the inspiration of the creation of Living with Dementia, CNY? What inspired you to do that?
So with Living with Dementia CNY, it started out as a conference, actually.
Oh, no kidding.
We hadn't had a dementia conference since 2018. It wasn't even a COVID thing, but there just wasn't a big dementia conference anymore. And everybody was like, it's hard to find the resources, especially free resources or low-cost resources, because they don't have any money to advertise. So it's hard for people to find those resources out there. So I had a couple of people who are like, you should do a conference, do a dementia conference. So we did our first one in 2023. And that's how Living with Dementia started. It was an all-day conference for caregivers. And we did a variety of things. We had elder care attorneys there. We did specific training for caregivers. We talked about brain change, what it looks like. We did what does engagement mean for a person with dementia. So we had, you know, 67 topics that we threw out there over 3 years, and we picked different ones that we did each year. And that's how Living with Dementia came to start. And then when I sat down with Melissa Murphy, who is the co-founder of Living with Dementia, we really wanted to provide a space as a nonprofit so that we could do this all the time, not the big conference, but help people find resources, help people get respite care that's at least helpful in covering them for at least a month so they can get a break, and education. You know, trying to give them tips and tricks on how to make this journey a little bit easier.
Sure.
And that's how it came to fruition.
Well, I think it's fabulous. And what just occurred to me, maybe other people might be wondering the same thing, is dementia hereditary?
Some types of dementia are hereditary. As you've heard in the news, well, let me go back. Huntington's disease is a type of dementia. And it is extremely hereditary, 50% chance.
It's called Huntington's? I've never
Huntington's.
Heard of that.
Huntington's, yep. It's more rare, and Huntington's is a very debilitating dementia, and it's 50% hereditary. So that is a very strong hereditary element. Dementia, they believe, does have a component of being able to have some hereditary to it. They are now in the news. I think everyone's heard about it this year. They now can do a blood test that will test you for APOE4, which is the marker that you are more probable to have a type of dementia. However, that is not mainstream yet. And that is something that is, you know, really with your neurologist, your clinical trials, things of that nature. It isn't something you can go in and ask your primary care doctor to give you right now. You have to have symptoms before they'll allow the testing.
Are there medications that can slow the progress down?
There are medications, especially in the clinical trial arena right now, that are showing promise to slow it down. And FDA approval on another medication that was infusion based also is another one that has been proven to slow it down. But again, this is where it comes into play. You've got to get the right diagnosis so that you know what you're treating.
Right. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. What types of support does the nonprofit focus on today?
So our three focuses right now are education and resources. So we educate caregivers on how to care, help them find resources in their area that will be helpful for them, training on what to do with people. And then we're also doing mini caregiver summits in 7 of the counties that we cover that will help the caregivers find other caregivers so they don't feel isolated. Think of it as a peer-to-peer type network, and give them valuable information when they come for 4 hours for that caregiving training, or we call mini summits. And in addition to that, we care for their loved one with dementia while they attend it so they can actually come.
Well, that's nice. You have a very important website, and I'm looking at it right now while I'm speaking to you. Living with Dementia Support Group, Caregiver Summits, and Respite Care. Would you like to talk a little bit about those?
So the respite care is the biggest piece that we raise money for. Respite care is desperately needed for these caregivers who are burnt out. And the average cost of in-home care here is $40 an hour.
Oh my goodness.
So it's very expensive for somebody to have anyone come in on a regular basis. And adult day programs range here anywhere from $85 to $225 for full day. Some include transportation, some don't. And they actually are a more affordable way to provide respite care. So all of our fundraising and grant writing and all those things that we're working on now is so that we can help provide respite care by paying for it. And the one thing that's really great is because I owned a home care company for 15 years, we know all the players. I have relationships with the different home care agencies, the adult day programs that are out there. So we can work together as partners so that we can get the right care into the right person.
Okay. So why is caregiver respite such an urgent need?
The biggest thing for caregiver respite, so caregivers typically stop taking care of themselves. And I will give you an example. I had a colleague who was a social worker that I worked with for many years. Both of her parents ended up having different types of dementia, and she was taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And she passed away just after both of them did, because she didn't take care of herself. This is not that uncommon. There are a lot of caregivers that end up passing away before their loved one with dementia because they stop doing stuff. They stop going to the doctors. They stop getting blood work done. They don't do any of their own stuff. It's all about the other, you know, the other person. And caregivers always put themselves last, and then they're completely depleted. And respite is not a luxury, or it shouldn't be a luxury. It is truly an essential part of being a caregiver. You have to have a break, because when caregivers are supported, the person you're helping is also supported. It's good for both of you.
Right. It's a win-win, isn't
it? It's a win-win.
And, you know, neither one of my parents have dementia, but I would just think, as the child, as that adult child, watching your parents suffer like this must be very difficult.
It is very difficult. That's why they call it the long goodbye, because you lose the person before they pass away. And right. For a lot of people, losing them before they actually pass is the worst part.
Wow. What advice do you give families who feel guilty asking for help?
Guilt is a real thing with families, and it is something that you just can't. And you're going to have to ask, because your brother doesn't know that him coming over for an hour so you can get a haircut is going to make a difference. So, and he's not going to think to offer that. So you do have to ask. And we try to help caregivers ask those questions. One of the things we do in our caregiver summits that are coming up is, you know, what is the biggest thing you miss now that you're a caregiver? And what would help you feel better if you could get a break? And if they say, I want to get my nails done, then we come up with a plan to figure out how that simple 1 hour time commitment can make a difference in someone's life and how we can make that happen. So it's very important to figure out what you need to stay well and that recharges you so that you can be a good caregiver. It's not easy.
So I'm looking at your caregiver summits. So mm-hmm. When are they exactly?
So they vary. Okay. Our caregiver summits will be posted up on our website soon. We don't have all of them up there yet. Okay. Our first one is going to be in Herkimer County, and that's going to be on the 31st of this month. And we have a lot of people already signed up for that. We've been partnering with the offices of the aging in the different counties and things of that nature. And then in April, we'll be doing Madison County and Oswego County. And then in May, we're going to be doing Cortland.
Okay. So somebody's listening and they live in Oregon and they're going, I need something like this. What would you say to that person living in Oregon?
So no matter where you live in the United States, there is an Office of the Aging for the county that you live in. So Onondaga County Office of the Aging is ours. Madison County Office of the Aging. Call them first because they know the different resources best if you don't have someone like us in your area. Mm-hmm. But it is the best place to start. Each Office of the Aging in each county offer different programs. Like the Madison County program, they actually offer a death doula program for people if they're interested. But in Onondaga County, that isn't something they offer at this time. So you'll find that your more rural counties are very creative in trying to get support. Herkimer County, for example, where we're doing our first summit, they have a mobile senior center. So they go from the different towns, because Herkimer County is very spread out, they go town to town and bring the senior center to a location to help engage with seniors. And that's a new program they're doing, which is just wonderful.
Yes. I would think that just listening to what you're saying and looking at your site and living with the dementia support group, I would think that.
That happens every Tuesday. There's lots of dementia support groups out there. The Alzheimer's Association has a lot of them. And you can literally put in, you know, you can Google Alzheimer's support group near me or dementia support group near me, and you'll be able to find different ones. We started one during COVID, and we just kept doing it. So it's Tuesdays from 9 to 10 Eastern time, and it's a Zoom, and anybody can get on and just talk.
You mentioned Zoom, right? It's a wonderful thing. And I was thinking, technology has come such a long way now. Whoever Zoom, when you heard the word Zoom years ago, you were talking about what a camera could do to zoom in on a picture.
Right.
And now we know that Zoom is a way of, you know, being in touch with family that doesn't live anywhere near you. I'm in a Zoom call, you know, all the time with family members that don't live nearby. And it is a wonderful way of being connected, especially when you really do live on the opposite side of the country and your loved one is in need. So I think that's a great technically advantage thing that has happened today. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, definitely. However, we still have a lot of people who can't use Zoom, or maybe the spouse of a loved one with dementia. So that's why people do in-person ones as well to help that situation. And each county has each county in the United States will have coverage by the Alzheimer's Association. So they have them in different counties, different in person. They also do virtual too. So they try to offer more than just virtual for those that really need to go because they just can't do the technology.
Sure. Not to mention not just only the technology, but just the emotional side of all of this. You're the person providing services to your loved one, but you better be getting some kind of help for yourself along the way. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. It's so important.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
One thing we talked about, Marcia, was, you know, getting the right diagnosis. If you have a heart problem, your primary care doctor sends you to a cardiologist. If you have, a liver problem, you're going to a liver specialist. And the thing is, if you have a brain problem, you need to be going to a specialist. And a lot of times we have found that primary care doctors will just treat. They'll say, oh, you're just, you know, you're losing your memory a little bit, or you have mild cognitive impairment. Mild cognitive impairment is a serious diagnosis, and you need to know that that can be a precursor to different types of dementia. So it's important that we are referring people to specialists when we have something wrong with our brain.
When someone's been diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment and they're put on medication for that, have you found in your experience that it sort of slows things down?
It's been pretty new, and it's hard to tell because I don't know the person from prior.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Just because the people that call me already have it. They're already in the thick of it. So it's very hard for me to speak
back
to that personally.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So this sounds like such important, rewarding, but in my mind, somewhat stressful work. What continues to motivate you to do this work?
I think the biggest thing is helping people. I love to be able to talk to a caregiver and give them an idea of something that might make their day a little easier, or finding an activity or a drop-up respite program or a memory care cafe that they didn't know existed that they could take their loved one to get a little bit of a break and meet some other people who are going through the same thing. Because as a caregiver, it can be so isolating. And it is good to know you're not the only one, because you feel alone in this journey.
Yeah, I would think that would be very important to, like you just said, not feel alone. You know, if you're just like looking to over your left shoulder, looking over your right shoulder and going, oh my God, what do I do now? Right?
Right.
Yeah. So I know we have a little bit more time, and I'm really appreciating all of your information. So if listeners wanted to take away one thing from this show today, what would you hope that would be?
I think the biggest thing is we should all be getting a memory screen when we're in our 50s. I mean, and earlier, if you think you have issues. And a lot of...
May I interrupt you just for a moment? Because
yeah.
Definitions mean everything to me. So I apologize for interrupting your train of thought.
Oh, no, that's okay.
You said that everyone should have a memory screen. I don't know. What is that?
A memory screen is often offered by a lot of your clinical trial places. Not all of them, but in this area, we have several that will offer a free memory screen. A free memory screen is a series of questions that you'll go through to evaluate your baseline memory and where you're at. So you have a baseline so that when you take it, you know, next year or the following year, you can see if there's been any significant changes. Baseline memory screen is important because then you know where you stand, and you don't have to share it with your doctor if you don't want to. But a lot of your clinical trial places will offer that as a community service because they want people to know what, you know, where they're at in this journey. And they take about 45 minutes. So your apple, table, penny, and draw the hands on a clock is a 1 minute question. But a real memory screen is about 45 minutes and goes through a series of questions. And someone who is knowledgeable about reading that will go over the results with you and see if there's anything. Early detection is key in all disease states, because if you know on the earlier side, you know, there's a lot of brain-gut connection, and we're going to continue to see more information on that. But there are some things you can do to change what you're doing to help slow the progress if you're diagnosed early enough.
Okay.
Not just meds. You know, exercise is so important. And, you know, heart and weight, diabetes, those are all big factors. And we all know that sugar's bad for us. And it's really important if, you know, we have earlier diagnosis of mild cognitive impairment, that we are looking at some of the things we're eating and we are choosing a healthier lifestyle and make sure that we keep moving because it can help.
Yes. There's a lot that goes into this, isn't there?
There is.
And you've been doing it for a long time, haven't you?
Yes. Yes.
So
but
how
I
do you,
love it.
Well, I think that's great. So I'm just curious, how do you balance in your life all of the demands that your job requires and balancing that with who you are as well so that you can manage to work this hard? What do you do to balance your life?
I think the important thing is we all have something that we like to do or something that we enjoy. So this gives me purpose. You know, running my company was more stressful because it just was a lot. It was a lot. So doing this is not, it doesn't feel as stressful because the purpose is there every day. And my kids are grown, so I don't have anybody taking that away, you know, that time away. So I have the time to really focus on this and make a difference.
Well, I guess where I was leaning towards is that, you know, some people feel like walking is important, yoga is important, things that you're doing for yourself specifically,
yes,
that just sort of fills your cup. And I was just wondering if there's anything like that that you do.
So one thing, I'm a scrapbooker, and that is a big fill my cup thing.
Nice.
And people that know me always thought that was funny because I'm not a crafty person, but I love to scrapbook and not digitally. It's all hand, you know, hands-on paper, stickers, all that kind of stuff, tools. And that is something that really does fill my cup. It really does. And I like to read.
Okay. So, I mean, because frankly, if you're not in balance with what you personally need and what your job requires, then I'm glad to hear that you find things that work for you. I do as well.
It's important.
Pardon me?
It's important.
Absolutely, it's important because, you know, we can't just spend our whole day in front of the computer.
No.
Or something else. So, I mean, I do things that people go, "You what?" Yes, every day I go to these ponds that are not far from my home, and I feed the ducks.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do I feed the ducks, but I represent and care for those ducks, because if somebody's down there giving them bread, I politely say, please don't give those ducks bread. That
yes.
is the worst thing in the world you can give a duck is bread. Trust me on this. So I the other thing I do, because, you know, this is just who I am as a person, where I walk on the sidewalk, there are a lot of trees,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times branches will fall off the trees, or a little bit of the branches, and they'll be they're in the walkway of where you're walking on the sidewalk.
Yep.
Honey, I bend over and pick those up and throw them to the side so that if you're walking with somebody and you're not paying attention, you could trip over those things or stones. You know, I kick them to the side. And today I rescued a caterpillar. I mean, I'm just a nut job, as some people would say. But it does fill my cup, I guess, is
yep.
what I'm trying to say to you. And
yeah.
I think that if we don't fill our cup, then perhaps we walk around not feeling like, isn't there more I could do? Volunteer, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, volunteering is a win-win in my opinion. I'm a Rotarian, so I belong to my Rotary Club. There are things
we have very strong Rotary here.
I know. Yes. Are you a Rotarian yourself?
I am not right now.
Well, you know, everybody can't do everything. Because there has to be some time for each of us to just be and just be, correct?
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
whatever that looks like for you, where you've calmed down, your shoulders are not your earrings, and you're just taking a deep breath, which is one of the reasons that I do yoga, and one of the reasons that I have this app on my phone called Insight Timer, which is a meditation app. Mm-hmm. And I do those things because, you know, I need to calm down. And there are times when I just need assistance in doing that. And I don't think that makes me unusual. Do you?
Absolutely not. And yes. It's, you know, it's one of those things. We all need to have something that rejuvenates us and gets us back on track. And I also play golf in the spring. It's a year-round sport here. So I joined a league with a girlfriend 2 years ago because I needed something where I didn't have to talk about work all the time. And it was great.
And you know, but that's the balance I'm talking about. Sometimes, yeah. You know, so sometimes, Sheila, sometimes I ask people this question, and you weren't expecting this, but I wanted to ask you. Knowing what you know today, what advice would you give your younger self?
Knowing what I know today, I would tell my younger self to make sure to take the time I need to refill my cup, because I have not always been very good at that. Mm-hmm. But I have made a lot of changes in the last year to make sure that I'm doing that more.
That's great. I think that sometimes I think we could all ask ourselves that question if you're just thinking to yourself, what do I want to think about this today? And then you think, well, what would I say to my younger self? And I think that's a really great thing to say. And I don't know about you, but in my office, I have all kinds of notes that are all over the place. One says, be kind to yourself. Because if you know how to be kind to others, then you know how to be kind to yourself. And sometimes we forget to do that. Would you agree?
We absolutely do not do that enough.
Right.
I have in my office pictures of the places I've traveled.
Oh, nice.
And I just love it because I did do quite a bit of traveling this past year.
That's great. Where'd you go?
Portugal, Ireland, Italy.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Germany.
Wow.
So,
lovely. You know, that's the balance I'm talking about, because hopefully while you were doing that, you weren't focusing on what was going on here. And you
I wasn't.
Isn't that a beauty?
It is.
I would agree with you. Mm-hmm. Well, do you have anything else you wanted to say before we say goodbye?
No, I think the big thing is, you know, caregivers, you need to be kind to yourself.
Yes.
And don't beat yourself up all the time, because there is no right answer. You are doing the best you can in the moment. And you have to just take a deep breath and know that you're doing the best you can.
Right. And I think that that's important, because if we can be kind to ourselves, that will allow us to be kind to others. And sometimes I tell people, I do this all the time. Sometimes I just hold my hand up and I look at the palm of my hand and I pretend like it's a mirror. And I say, you're going to be okay. Just take a deep breath. You're going to be fine. That's just one of the silly things that I do. But, you know, other than my cat, I live alone. So, you know, you've got to have some things in place that support what you need, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Taking deep breaths is the best thing you can do when you are stressed, because you have high cortisol levels going on. And if you do deep breathing, it'll take that cortisol right out of your system, and then you can think more clearly.
I agree. That's absolutely true. And that deep breath needs to, I do it in through the nose, out through the mouth, and you should really be able to feel that and know that you've taken in that air. So, well, I want to just thank you once again, Sheila, for all of your information. I think that people will really find that they can relate to what you're talking about. And I'm just grateful that we could spend this time together.
I really appreciate it. And I hope some people look at the website, because they will be able to find things like this in their areas as well. And that's livingwithdementiacny.org.
Right. That will be on my website.
Wonderful.
So thank you once again. Have a lovely rest of your day. I've enjoyed this conversation with you.
Me too. Thank you, Marcia. You have
You're
a great
welcome.
Day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.